Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on swine flu vaccine right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, they're banned from our public institutions, and they're banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And now they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion? That's right, your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty, and you do not have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. And then take a look at our archives. The archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right off of our website. If you can't get it at georgegordon.org, then go to georgegordon.com, georgegordon.com. Hey, we're talking about the swine flu vaccine, and the latest international forecaster was a one-paragraph blurb about British nurses' fear swine flu vaccine. A full two-thirds of British nurses are undecided about or are outright against getting vaccinated for swine flu, the Telegraph reports. Some 60% of those who plan to decline say they are concerned about the safety of the untested treatment. I would not be willing to put myself at risk of as yet unknown long-term side effects, says one. Another 31% of nurses say there is no need for the vaccine, and I have yet to be convinced that there's a genuine health risk, says another. Now, that's the British nurses. Now, there's another little part to the international forecaster story here on swine flu update. The major news media is not reporting that neurologists have serious reservations regarding the swine flu vaccine, causing neurological nerve damage. The swine flu vaccine now being distributed is not that much different from the 1976 vaccine that killed and damaged hundreds of people with Guillain-Barré syndrome. However, back then you could still sue the drug companies who manufactured the vaccine. Today you cannot. In 1976, a confidential report surfaced that the government had been warned by way of their senior neurologist that the swine flu vaccine was linked to a deadly nerve disease. Our government kept the truth from the people then in 1976, and I don't believe that we can expect the operation to be any different today. Apparently, those being vaccinated with an untested vaccine can develop a serious neurological condition called Guillain-Barré syndrome. Guillain-Barré syndrome attacks the lining of the nerves, causes paralysis and inability to breathe, which then produces death. The potential for the new swine flu to deliver a deadly form of GBS is so great that neurologists across the country are advising parents not to get it. In 1976, if you got the swine flu vaccine, your chances of getting GBS were 8 times higher than normal. With the new vaccine additives of squalene, there could be a whole new category of side effects. So ask yourself if there have been reported any increases in cases of GBS in areas of the world that have swine flu cases but no swine flu vaccine. Then you can decide whether you want to be a guinea pig or whether you just want to say no to this swine flu vaccine. Ingredients in the vaccine contain substances to preserve and stretch the supplies, which have not yet been approved by the FDA. If enough people say no, we have a chance to reduce the impact of this pandemic and side effects such as GBS from vaccination. Now, for those of you worried about government quarantine or loss of employment or child custody due to any mandated vaccination, we offer a possible solution. Apothecary Herb's upgraded pandemic kit is designed to strengthen your own immune system by 10 times and help protect you from swine flu and bird flu this fall. Now, this kit contains 2 backup products for a forced vaccination situation to help draw the vaccine back out and to protect your blood system from the virus. These items have worked well on venomous snake bites, bee stings, poison ivy, and brown recluse spider bites. So if you're forced to be vaccinated, you could use these 2 products immediately after getting the vaccination. If you haven't gotten your upgraded pandemic kit from Apothecary Herbs, don't wait too long. The time is now. Now, this is from the International Forecaster. I'm not going to give you the name and address. If you want it, go to the International Forecaster, Bob Chapman. It's internationalforecaster.com. And you can ask for the appropriate information. Now, this last program in the series, I want to bring up the subject of your immune system, because for thousands of years, the human race has survived without vaccines. And there's an important reason why. Your creator, your designer, the engineer, the master biologist who designed your body, built into it a complex system called the immune system to fight off, to ward off, and to heal your body of these diseases. Now, your immune function works like this. The immune system is an intricate network of specialized tissues, organs, cells, and chemicals. The lymph nodes, spleen, bone marrow, thymus gland, and tonsils all play a role, as do the lymphocytes, which are specialized white blood cells, antibodies, and interferon. There are two types of immunity. First is called innate and adaptive. Innate immaturity, which is present at birth, is the first barrier against microorganisms. For example, the skin, mucus secretions, and acidity of the stomach act as barriers to keep unwanted germs away from more vulnerable tissues. Okay, so this first type is called your innate and adaptive immune response. The second immune system barrier to infection, adaptive immunity, is acquired later in life. For example, after an immunization or successfully fighting off an infection, the adaptive immune system retains a memory of all of the invaders that it has ever faced. This is why people usually get the measles only once, although they may be repeatedly exposed. Unfortunately, some infections, some bacteria, such as viruses, for instance, that cause the common cold, disguise themselves and must be fought off time after time, again and again, by your immune system. Now, there are dietary changes that may be helpful to improving or strengthening your immune systems. All forms of sugar interfere with the ability of white blood cells to destroy bacteria, and this includes honey. Alcohol, which is a common ingredient in drugstore cold and cough remedies, interferes with a wide variety of immune defenses. Excessive dietary fat reduces natural killer cell activity. Now, I want you to notice that dietary fat, remember in the Bible, in Leviticus 3, verse 17, we're instructed, you shall eat no manner of fat. Fat interferes with your immune system. Having a Big Mac and fries does nothing to help you ward off the flu. When the common cold, sore throat, or ear infections continually recur, many nutritionally oriented physicians consider whether allergies may be a contributing factor. Many medical doctors treat ear infections with antibiotics or surgery, or use drainage tubes. None of these approaches appear to work. The link between allergy and ear infection has been well documented. Frequently, these infections disappear when the food, which is most often pasteurized milk, causes a reaction, and if it's avoided, the reaction disappears. Now, there are lifestyle changes that may be helpful. The immune system is suppressed during times of stress. While optimal nutrition helps maintain a strong immune system and helps you combat the harmful effects of stress, other challenges to a healthy immune system include chronic insomnia, overwork, and the aging process. Immunity gradually declines over the years, increasing susceptibility to infection. Increase exercise, natural killer cell activity, which may help prevent infections. So exercise then increases your natural killer cell activity, which then helps you to ward off these infections. Nutrients that may be helpful include zinc. Supplements may increase immune function. And some nutritionally oriented doctors recommend zinc supplements for anyone with recurring or recurrent infections, suggesting 25 milligrams per day for adults and lower amounts for children, depending upon body size and weight. Now, a double-blind study of 100 men and women with colds provided half of the group with lemon-flavored zinc gluconate lozenges containing 13.3 milligrams of zinc to dissolve in the mouth every 2 waking hours for the duration of their cold symptoms. The other half of the group unknowingly received a supply of dummy lozenges developed to have a medicinal taste, similar to the zinc lozenges, but without the zinc included. Now, the zinc lozenges reported fewer days of coughing, headaches, hoarse voice, stuffy nose, nasal drainage, or a sore throat. In fact, while the average cold sufferer reports symptoms that last for, on average, 7.6 days, those using the zinc lozenges stopped experiencing cold symptoms after just 4.4 days, almost half the time. Because the effects of the zinc gluconate on the cold happen only with lozenges, it may be that the zinc helps not by stimulating immunity, but by physically killing the viruses topically in the throat. Vitamin A is needed by a healthy immune system. Vitamin A supplements have helped vitamin A deficient children with measles or infectious diarrhea in many studies. Without enough vitamin A, microorganisms can penetrate skin and mucous membranes, including the lungs. Infections may cause a reduction in your body's ability to store vitamin A. Without normal storage, extra vitamin A may be necessary. Vitamin C stimulates the immune system in part by elevating interferon levels, which accounts for the vitamin's antiviral activity. In a Japanese study, surgical patients receiving transfusions were given 2 grams per day of vitamin C, and they did not contract hepatitis, a common problem in post-operative patients. Now, a second study claiming to show that patients receiving vitamin C had not benefited actually demonstrated a 29% lower risk of contracting hepatitis, though these results were not statistically significant. Hari Hamilia at the University of Helsinki in Finland, after reviewing 20 double-blind studies, reports that while vitamin C has only a small effect in preventing a cold, it does reduce a cold's duration and severity. In fact, vitamin C, given in therapeutic doses, that is 1 to 8 grams per day, at the onset of a cold reduces the duration of the cold episodes by as much as 50%. This effect appears to be dose-dependent. That is, the greater the dose of vitamin C taken, the stronger the effect. Now, Lactobacillus acidophilus, the friendly bacteria found in yogurt, produces acids that kill invading bacteria. Now, are there any side effects or interactions? Now, some people report that zinc lozenges lead to mild problems such as nausea, mouth irritation, and a bad taste. People taking the zinc for more than a few weeks should take copper as well. That's because taking too much zinc, that is several hundred milligrams per day for an adult, will actually depress immune function and should be avoided. Women who could become pregnant should not take more than 10,000 international units of vitamin A per day. Some individuals develop diarrhea after as little as a few thousand milligrams of vitamin C per day, while other people are not bothered by 10 times that amount. However, high levels of vitamin C can deplete the body of copper, which is an essential nutrient. So it is prudent to ensure adequate copper intake at higher intakes of vitamin C. Copper now is found in many multivitamin mineral supplements, and there are no reported side effects with even large intakes of acidophilus. Now, there are herbs that may be helpful. Echinacea, for instance. Echinacea helps support healthy immune function. Echinacea lowers the risk of colds and upper respiratory tract infections. And many people use 40 drops of the echinacea tincture 2 to 3 times a day for 6 to 8 weeks. Echinacea in capsule form is also commonly available. Then there's garlic. Garlic has natural antibiotic abilities. Supplementing with garlic increases natural killer cell activities in AIDS patients. Complex polysaccharides are present in Aspergillus and the Maitake mushroom have the unique ability to act as immunomodulators, and as such are researched for their potential role in AIDS. The primary polysaccharide beta-D-glucan is well absorbed when taken orally and is currently under review as a supportive tool for HIV infection. Oxyngel alkaloids help cat's claw stimulate the immune system. Cat's claw is an herb. Green tea has been shown to stimulate production of immune cells and has antibacterial properties. Research has investigated FOTI's role in strong immune function, such as red blood cell formation and antibacterial action. Now, are there any side effects or interactions? Well, echinacea is essentially non-toxic when taken orally. People should not take echinacea without consulting a physician if they have an autoimmune illness such as lupus or some other progressive disease such as tuberculosis or multiple sclerosis. Those who are allergic to flowers of the daisy family should take echinacea with caution. And there are no known contraindications to the use of echinacea during pregnancy or lactation. Most people enjoy garlic. However, some individuals who are sensitive to it may experience heartburn or flatulence because of garlic's anti-clotting properties. Persons taking anticoagulant drugs should check with their doctor before taking garlic in any massive doses. Those scheduled for surgery should inform their surgeon if they're taking garlic supplements. There are no known contraindications to the use of garlic during pregnancy and lactation. No serious adverse effects have yet been reported with cat's claw, although those with an autoimmune illness, multiple sclerosis, or tuberculosis should first consult a physician. European practitioners avoid combining this herb with hormonal drugs, insulin, or vaccines. Cat's claw, until proven safe, should be taken only with great caution by pregnant or lactating women. The unprocessed roots of FOTI may cause mild diarrhea. Some people who are sensitive to FOTI may develop a skin rash. Very high doses may cause numbness in the arms and legs. This is from the book The Natural Pharmacy in association with Health Notes Online. From the world's most trusted experts, covers all major ailments and conditions, includes herbs, nutritional supplements, and homeopathy. If you'd like a copy, The Natural Pharmacy. Let's see where we can get a copy of that. The Natural Pharmacy. It has a Library of Congress catalog and publication data. Here we go. How to order. Single copies may be ordered from Prima Publishing. That's P-R-I-M-A, Publishing. Post Office Box 1260, BK, Rockland, California, 95677. And they got a telephone number, 916-632-4400. That phone number again, 916-632-4400. It's put out by Prima Publishing, P-R-I-M-A, Publishing, P.O. Box 1260 BK. Rockland, spelled R-O-C-K-L-I-N, California, 95677. Now, any health food store can probably steer you onto a number of publications on or books that contain information on strengthening your immune system. But if you've got a pen and paper handy, let me write down, or you can write down, the specific, the herbs and vitamins that strengthen your immune system. Start off with zinc, vitamin A, vitamin C, acidophilus, echinacea, garlic, astragalus, maitake mushrooms, cat's claw, green tea, and fo-tai. And fo-tai is spelled F-O hyphen T-I. It's an herb. Echinacea is spelled E-C-H-I-N-A-C-E-A. That's an herb. Garlic, G-A-R-L-I-C. That's an herb. Astragalus, A-S-T-R-A-G-A-L-U-S, an herb. Maitake, M-A-I-T-A-K-E, mushrooms, an herb. Cat's claw, C-A-T-S, claw, C-L-A-W, an herb. Green tea, an herb. Now, zinc is a mineral. And the vitamin A and vitamin C are vitamins. And acidophilus is a, and I take it in capsule form. It is the digestive bacteria that your gut needs to digest your food. And it's also known as the good bacteria. Bacteria come in two forms, good and bad. Some bacteria cause disease. Or if they don't cause it, they're highly present when disease is in operation. They get out of balance. There probably is no such thing as a bad bacteria. When God created the earth and all the things that are in it, everything here is in balance, and everything here is necessary for the balance of the whole. But when it gets out of balance, it can be bad for you. All right, now again, this publication, The Natural Pharmacy, it's only one of many. There are a lot of publications out there. Any health food store can help you with an immune strengthening program. Immune strengthening program. In the final analysis, even those that are advocating the use of vaccinations tell you plainly, this is for the purposes of strengthening your immune system. The entity in your body that is going to heal you of your diseases is your immune system. And if you impair your immune system, you will die. It's just that simple. No medicine, no shots are going to heal you. It is true in allopathic medicine, when your body gets out of balance, such as, let's suppose you have pneumonia. The pneumonia will overwhelm your immune system and kill you. So along comes penicillin or some other antibiotic. The doctor applies the antibiotic and kills the bad bacteria, which allows your immune system then to get the upper hand on the bad bacteria. That's an example of invasive medical practice that actually works. Now, whether that is the only solution to pneumonia is another subject for another day, because it isn't. But it is one, and it does work. Let's take cancer. The doctor can invade your body with surgery and cut the tumor out. And if he's fortunate enough to get all of the tumor, now your body can overcome that tumor and you've been cured of cancer. Surgery does work. In some cases, a doctor might use some chemical to kill the tumor. In which case, then your body disposes of the tumor, and your body then, and its immune function, overcomes the cancer, and again, you've been healed, you've been cured. So, cut and poison, along with burn. Now, I don't know that burning, that is, the use of radiation to kill tumors, is very effective, but let's suppose that it is. If, in fact, you could kill the tumor with the radiation, and if that gives your immune system an opportunity to gain the upper hand over the cancer, again, you can be cured. This works 37% of the time, by the way. 37% of the time. So if 100 people have cancer, go to a doctor, go through the standard procedure, 37 cases will survive for 5 years, which is called a cure. If they die in the sixth year, they've been cured, and then there's been a reinfection. Now, that doesn't do much for the other 63%. Those just die. Now, of the 63% who have cancer, there are 14 ways to deal with cancer. I only mentioned those three: cut, burn, and poison. So there are 10 other ways to combat cancer, and your survival rate will be substantially longer than 5 years, unless you're already 85. So you might tuck that one away in your heart. Your immune system is the number one defense against disease. All right, let me give you a mid-course reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour, or you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not eight schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of the above can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can download a copy of that free General Law CD package by going to our archives page at georgegordon.org or georgegordon.com, georgegordon.com. And you can stream it or you can download it on your own CD. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about swine flu vaccine. Today's story concerns your immune system. Now, yesterday I mentioned to you that there is a legal methodology by which you can avoid these vaccinations. There's no such thing in this country, this is the United States of America, no such thing in this country, in any of our 50 states or possessions, as a compulsory vaccination against your will and over your objection. That does not exist here. It certainly does appear to exist here. And it does, in fact, exist among the ignorant who do not know how to assert their constitutional rights. So there are many people who are cunningly coerced into receiving or using vaccinations who would not, if they thought they had a choice, but because they don't know, they become cunningly coerced into waiving their rights due to their ignorance. Now, in a newspaper article dated back about 1993, maybe as early as 1987, I cut it out. It was by an author, Christine M. Severin. White House legislation was recently introduced into Congress to establish federal tracking and surveillance of families through their children's social security numbers to monitor vaccination rates among preschoolers. Congressional hearings were staged to include only those who benefit from the government's multimillion dollar vaccine bureaucracy. Those invited included Health and Human Services Secretary Donna Shalala, Marion Wright, Elderman of the Children's Defense Fund, four presidents of companies that produce vaccines, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and public health officials. Parents and healthcare professionals concerned about vaccine safety and efficacy were barred from testifying. So I wanted to point out that when this bill was passed during the early years of the Clinton administration, Joe Sixpack, Sally Housewife, and those that were opposed to this vaccine legislation were simply shut out of the hearings. Okay, now, so much for fairness. Now, no one is interested in hearing from parents, the people who love and care for their children every day. If parents were permitted to speak, another side of U.S. vaccination policy would have been heard. The often repeated fact that for every $1 spent on vaccines, $10 is saved in later costs is based upon studies that predate the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986. Therefore, the purported cost effectiveness of vaccines does not include awards at administration of the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which the legislation instituted. As of March 1993, VICP awards, that's the victims of vaccines, for vaccine injury or death were $329 million, with a 1993 predicted shortfall of $171 million and a backlog of more than 3,000 cases. The estimated future liability for pre-1988 injuries exceeds $1.7 billion, with complete adjudication of claims not expected until 1998 for the majority of claimants. There is no money. So, first of all, for more than half of the people who are damaged by these vaccines, you will not receive one thin dime. End of report. Of those who do receive money, it will take until 1998. Now, notice that this is done about 1993 with the passage of the Act. I reported that to you on a previous program in the series. I think it was 93. So it's going to take 5 years, and it'll exhaust the fund. It's going to take $1.7 billion, and none of that is ever calculated as a cost of doing business. And that's because after 2002, I believe it was, when our illustrious representative, Dick Armey from Texas, snuck through a provision in a totally unrelated bill exempting pharmaceutical companies from suit from damage done by vaccines. God love them. All right, now let's take a look here. Government doesn't let you and I, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, testify at the committee hearings. Then they sneak through legislation that bars us from suing the pharmaceutical companies. And then they don't count the cost of the victim's compensation fund. And then they tell us that for every dollar spent, we save $10 in additional costs. What do you think of that? Hey, that's the American way, isn't it? Hey, that's just fairness and even-handedness from beginning to end, don't you think? All right, now with that out of the way, as of March 1993, when this VICP got put into place, the VICP costs do not include private settlements or the many families who become dependent on public assistance for medical and living expenses due to vaccine injuries. Wisconsin State Journal, dated March 14th, therefore, taxpayers subsidize drug companies by footing the bill for their vaccine liability costs. Okay? Let's analyze that one for a minute. You take your kid down, get them vaccine handicapped, and it comes down with autism. So this autistic kid now throws you into bankruptcy, and you have to now go on welfare and go on to total state dependence in order for you to take care of this kid. Not a dime of that is ever attributed to vaccines. Now, the vaccine companies come along and they tell you, through their government agents, that's the FDA and National Institutes of Health and so on, that these vaccines are good for you and you need them. Then they come along with legislation and say, if you don't get them, we're going to send social aid out and take your kid. So now you're cunningly coerced into giving your kid the vaccine, which permanently damages about 1,000 a month. It's about 12,000 a year. The actual number from statistics is 10,200. 10,200. I gave you that number the other day, of which about 300 and some change, 350, 320, die every year. Now, I'll be the first to concede 320 deaths out of 50 million injections every year. That's not a hell of a lot. if the vaccines are in fact safe, healthy, and needed and necessary, probably 350 deaths a year be worth the price. But the vaccines aren't safe, and they're not healthy, and they don't work. We've been propagandized into believing that they do. And I don't doubt that you believe that they do, but the fact is they don't. Now, there's more to the story here. Vaccine failure rates are also not factored into the cost-benefit analysis. For example, half of the reported whooping cough cases in Ohio from 1987 to 91 occurred in vaccinated persons where the vaccination status was known. All right, so think about that for a minute. Half the cases in Ohio. Now, do you suppose that it's something different in Florida, California, and New York? I mean, come on, let's wake up and smell some coffee here. Vaccine failure rates are not factored into this cost-benefit analysis. Half of the reported whooping cough cases in Ohio, so the children, all of the children in Ohio are vaccinated. And then a certain number of those children come down with whooping cough. Well, hell, half of them were vaccinated. So that means 50% of them. Now, that's the 50-50. I said, hell, flip a coin. That'll give you the same results. You could just flip a coin. We know that the whooping cough vaccine does not work half the time. Therefore, you don't know that it works in the other half. That's assuming facts, not in evidence. Nobody has ever tested these vaccines to find out if they work. Not one test has ever been conducted. And if you think they have, name it. Send me an email, would you? Give me the double-blind study. I know a lot of tests have been done by pharmaceutical companies that have a vested interest in the outcome. Those are staged theatrical events. Nobody's ever tested a vaccine in a double-blind study by totally neutral scientific observers. Never had a one yet. Now, the pharmaceutical industry is not going to produce a study that's negative to their cause. Neither is the FDA or any of the other government agencies. I mean, come on, let's wake up and be realistic. In 1989, nearly three-fourths of the 2,720 reported cases of measles in Ohio were in vaccinated people. Did you get that number? 75% of the measles reported in measles cases had already been vaccinated. So when your kid is vaccinated for measles, we know statistically 75% of the time it doesn't work. So for you to assume that it's working in the 25% of the cases where your child was in fact immunized and he didn't get the measles is assuming facts, not in evidence. Again, no studies have ever been done. Not one. And with more than 3,000 cases of measles in Ohio from 1987 to 91, there were zero deaths and no serious complications were reported. Ohio is not alone in its experience. These data are comparable to other states and they reflect the nation as a whole. The Food and Drug Administration and Center for Disease Control and Prevention admit that they do not thoroughly investigate the nearly 1,000 vaccine adverse reaction reports collected monthly by the government. The FDA estimates that only 10% of physicians report vaccine adverse reactions. So when parents are told that the benefits of vaccine outweigh the risks, that's a lie, and nobody knows. Okay, now let's take a look at that number. Every month, the FDA receives some reports that tell them that there are some vaccine-related incidents. Only 10% of those are reported, and it numbers about 1,000 a month. Now, if 1,000 are being reported and 90% aren't, then the real number is 10,000 a month times 12 months is 120,000 adverse reactions to vaccinations every year. That's the real number. It's 120,000. Now, 350 deaths are being reported as of this moment in time concerning vaccines that cause death. But if only 10% are reported, then we have to take 350 and multiply that times 10. That gives us 3,500 deaths a year. That's the real number. You're not being told that. Now, if you had these facts, you might make a different decision. Listen to this. Despite evidence that vaccines can cause permanent disability or death and are not always effective in preventing disease, parents are threatened to vaccinate their children. For example, as of January 1, 1993, aid to families with dependent children in Georgia was contingent on children being vaccinated. So if you want state aid, your kids have to be vaccinated. Some families who have experienced government coercion include a Middletown woman with two children who were killed by the DPT, diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus vaccine, received two letters from the Ohio Department of Health that her only surviving child had to be vaccinated, reported in the Dayton Daily News, March 11, 1988. A Bellefontaine woman whose baby died 17 hours after a DPT shot was threatened with losing her WIC benefits for refusing to vaccinate another child. And a Kansas mother, upon questioning a public health nurse about what would happen if she did not vaccinate her child, she was told by the public health nurse the state would have her immunized anyway, and then would place her in a foster home. Subsequently, the child was permanently handicapped by the vaccine. This is reported in a case called Graham versus Wythe, U.S. District Court for Kansas in 1987. Now, a recent U.S. court decision in Pennsylvania concerning a 13-year-old girl suffering irreversible brain damage from the measles vaccine received at school shows what little rights parents have. Like all U.S. courts, the court describes vaccines as unavoidably unsafe. So here's the U.S. District Court now in Pennsylvania. The judge said vaccines are unavoidably unsafe and said that the vaccine maker adequately warned of risks in its package insert, although these parents were not given this insert. So your kid is vaccinated at school. Nobody's going to give you the insert from the vaccination package that tells you that these are dangerous vaccines. Now, remember, every time your kid's vaccinated, you sign a piece of paper giving your consent. Now, if you want to give your consent, that's your choice in life, but you don't have to. And if a school nurse says to you, well, we're going to put your kid in foster care and take him away from you, that's being cunningly coerced into waiving your rights due to your ignorance. That's not true. Now, if you don't know how to deal with the school nurse and you don't know how to deal with public officials who are threatening you, now stop and think now for a minute. If a school nurse is threatening you, who in the hell is the master and who is the servant here? It's pretty obvious that you, the citizen with the child, are the servant and the school nurse is your master. Now, it would seem like to me, you voters out there, you citizens, you sovereign American voters, ought to take control. Now, you can do that, but you have to know what your rights are and you have to know what the law is and how to use the law. And quite frankly, from my experience, the average Joe Sixpack American does not know what his rights are and does not know how to research or to use the law. But the school nurse does. Social lady does. Which puts you then at a disadvantage. And it reverses your role. It reverses your role from the sovereign American citizen to the ward of a bureaucrat who is inappropriately applying the law against you, not for you. Now, because the government bought the vaccine and can rarely be sued, the parents are solely responsible for the care of their now mentally retarded daughter, even though they withheld permission for her to be vaccinated. You'll find that in Mazur versus Merck, U.S. Court of Appeals, Third Circuit, 1992. These people did not object correctly. Now, we covered that yesterday, so let me hit it for you again. You have three ways to object to vaccination. It can be a personal objection. Some states will accept a personal objection. Most states will not. So if you just walk in and say, hey, I'm opposed to this, that's what happened in this case here in Mazur versus Merck, doesn't work in Pennsylvania. You got two other alternatives. Here's what works: a religious objection or a medical objection. That's what works. And had they made that objection, the child wouldn't have been vaccinated. And if the child had been vaccinated, they would have had recourse against the school. Anytime that a school nurse or somebody vaccinates your kid against or over your objection, they're liable. It's just that simple. Now, you can take that to the bank. Now, it is true that people are cunningly coerced out of their rights continuously. I don't deny that. But there's no such thing in this country as compulsory vaccination. That hasn't occurred. There's no such thing as compulsory military service. That's another fiction. That hasn't happened in this country. I know a lot of people have been drafted into the Army, but they signed the enlistment contract and they took a step forward. Every single one of them raised their right hand and swore an oath and divorced themselves from their Constitution. And they swore that oath in violation of Matthew 5:33. Through 37 and James 5:12. You can't become a soldier without taking that oath. You can't become a soldier without violating the Ten Commandment rule on swearing an oath. Now, when we violate the Ten Commandments or the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments given by our Creator, you can expect that there's going to be some repercussions. Vaccines and vaccination violate that Ten Commandment principle of law. Vaccination violates the Ten Commandments. That's the bottom line. Now, if you want to do that, you know, you're free, white, and 21. Get out there and get after it. But if you do, there may be some side effects. There may be some repercussions that come from it. And that includes this recent recommendation to vaccinate newborns against Hepatitis B, which is basically a disease of intravenous drug users and the sexually promiscuous. Now, unless you're an intravenous drug user or a whore, what in the hell do you need to vaccinate your child for Hepatitis B for? Huh? Why would you want to give that kind of deadly vaccine to a newborn baby? It's your choice. Make it wisely. Hey, we're running low on time here. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. And we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.